All right, we're beginning here four lines down on the top of Memchet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is in the middle of discussing the question about what exactly is the responsibilities of the individual when they offer the right or give permission to the other parties to enter into their property. The Gemara phrased it this way, Ma'u denafshehu dekabel aleh? Did he only accept responsibility for damage that emanates from him and that his responsibility? Or did he accept full responsibility even for things that come from the outside exogenous types of nezek, that he accepts responsibility for that? The Gemara brought one proof yesterday with Tashma from a Braita, and here at Tashma again we're going to look at another Braita to see if we can come to a conclusion about that. Once again he brings in his shore to the Chatzer Balabait without permission. A shore, third-party shore, enters into the fray over here, v'nakcho, and he gores him, patur. In that instance, he is patur. V'michnis birshut, now that he was brought in with permission, chayav, then he is responsible. Man patur uman chayav. Who exactly is the bright to speak about it is patur or chayav here? Lav patur balachatzer, v'chayav balachatzer. If we were to learn it that the patur and chayav here reference the balachatzer, then we'd have an answer to our third question here. The Balachatzer is responsible then, if you say Chayav, for damage that's coming from third parties when he gives permission for the person to enter. And that would be an answer to our question if you assume the Patur and the Chayav here are referencing the Balachatzer. Where it says, well, doesn't have to be that way. Patur Balashur, Mechayav Balashur. It has to do with the Balashur, his responsibilities. Is the Balashur responsible or is he not responsible? My birshut to my shlo birshut. The same question the Gemara asked in yesterday's daf with regards to the Braita is why does Rishut and shlo birshut have any impact on a third party? Yesterday we discussed it in the context of Shane because Shane has a different din birshut arabim than it has birshut and Isaac. And therefore we said that if he had permission to be there, it changed the dynamic to make it into Rishut and Isaac vis-a-vis third parties, obviously not between the Shutafim themselves, but to a third party, Bishut and Isaac, and Bichayav Hashem, versus if the person didn't have permission to be there, then it would be considered or classified as Rishut Arabim, not in the real sense of Rishut Arabim, but Rishut Arabim is a place where, so a similar thing over here would be true, the only thing difference here is we're dealing with Karen. And in Karen, there is no such distinction between Bishut and Isaac and Rishut Arabim. So it's hard to understand. So some explain that this is the shita of Rabbi Tarfon. So therefore, Rabbi Tarfon has the din that nezek of a Karen is different in Rishut and Izak than it is in Rishut and Rabim. With regards to Rishut and Rabim, there's a differentiation or distinction between Tam and Mu'ad, whereas in the Rishut and Izak, that differentiation, that distinction does not exist. And you pay full nezek in Chatzer and Izak, even if it is a Tam. So therefore, Bishut, Avilei Karen, Bechatzer, and Izak. If he has permission to be there, then it's Karen, Bishut, and Izak. Meshalem, Nezek, Shalem. Then he has to pay full Nezek. Shalo, Bishut, if he doesn't have permission to be there, Avilei Karen, Bishut, Rabim, Velo, Meshama, Elechatzi, Nezek. It's considered to be Karen, Bishut, Rabim, and he would only have to pay Chatzi, Nezek. So depending on whether the injured party has permission to be there, will determine whether the space is considered to be Rishut, Rabim. Rishut Rabim means that both parties don't have Rishut to be there. Both the animal that was damaged as well as the one that did the damage, neither had rights to be there. So it's the equivalent of Rishut Rabim in the sense that neither of them have rights to be there, so they're both in the same boat. And for that reason, he'll be under the rubric of Rishut Rabim and Karen, which is Mu'ad and Tam. Mu'ad plays Nezek Shalem, Tam plays Chatzi Nezek. On the other hand, if the Nizak's shore had right to be there, then it becomes Chatzar and Nizak, and Lefi Rabbi Tarfon, then that makes it into Mu'ad and Tam Pei Nezek Shalem, and for that reason the Balashur will be Chayav. So the meaning of Chayav and Patur, according to this, means Chayav Nezek Shalem, or Patur mi Nezek Shalem, but only Chayav Chatzi Nezek. So the Chayav and Patur are not completely Chayav or Patur, but Chayav and Nezek Shalem or Patur mi Nezek Shalem. And therefore again, this break, there's no proof to the fact as to whether when you accept responsibility, how far you go in accepting responsibility, because we could explain the Braita in an alternate fashion, not being Patur and Chayav of the Bala Chatzir, but rather Patur and Chayav of the Bala Shur. Now, next trip. Hayitita, the Alta, the Meifa, Bahau Beita. There was this woman who entered her in the house to bake her goods inside of the house. Ata Barcha, the Mari, the Beita. the aes, the goat of the owner of the house came along, achla l'lisha, he ate the dough that this woman had brought in, chavil, he got a fever, he felt ill, umit, and died. Chayava rova lishlume d'mei barcho. Rava compelled the woman to pay for the damage that was done to the goat, or meaning to pay for the full value of the goat that was killed here. So lema pligat d'rav. Let's say that Rava's din over here, Rava's psak over here, argues on what Rav said. We saw in yesterday's daf. Tamarav habilei shlo tochal. That we blame the animal when it eats something that causes it illness. We blame the animal itself because the animal should know better. It either shouldn't eat so much or should know that this isn't good for it. And if the animal eats it, then it's the animal's fault and not the person who brought it in, even though they brought it in improperly. So Amrei, hachi ashto. How can you compare the cases? Hatam shelo bishut, lo kabila le'nitiruta. Over there, it was done without permission, and therefore there was no responsibility accepted by the party who brought the fruits in there, even though he did it improperly, even though he brought it in illegal, he didn't have permission to bring it in there. But when he brought it in there, he didn't accept any responsibility for the animal eating it. Therefore, you say, the animal ate it, it's the animal's problem. Hacha b'shut kabila le nitiruta. Or here, it really should be kabila leha nitiruta. Over here, where she entered with permission, she accepted responsibility for the animal. So now, the Gemara here is very much relying on what's going to happen in a second to explain the case here. Because, in a sense, the case is inexplicable in the way that it's framed now, because it's unclear what exactly the woman's responsibilities over here. If she didn't have permission to be there, then it's exactly like the case that Rav says. If she does have permission to be there, then why is it that she's responsible for the animal eating her stuff? If the Baal Bayit gave her permission to be there, it should be the Baal Bayit's problem to take care of it. And so for that reason, it's very hard to understand the case until you get to the Gemara's conclusion. The Baal Tosafot note that as well, that even though here it seems like the Gemara has a direction, it's very hard to understand unless you know the conclusion of the Gemara. So that's what the Gemara asks now. How is this different than the case we brought yesterday where the woman goes in to mill her grain in the house of the Baal Bayit, shelo birshut, without permission, v'chaltan be'emto shel Baal Bayit, and then the animal of the Baal Bayit eats them, patur. Over there, it's patur, v'im huska, if the animal is damaged by it, chayevet, then she's responsible. Taima shelo birshut, that's only because she did it without permission. Ha birshut, had she done it with permission, patur, then she would have been patur. That's the exact opposite of the conclusion of our bright over here, where she's doing it with permission, and she is responsible for the goat that dies from the eating. Amrei litchon chitin. So here the Gemara explains the core difference, which will then explain everything that we've seen until now, which is that when she goes in to mill the grains, came into lo bayit sniuta, midei lo bayit misalke marvata de chatzer nafshayu. For that reason, the owner of the area does not have to vacate the area. And therefore the responsibility of protecting her items, as well as her not being responsible if the animal eats it, is because the Baal Bayit is present, and his presence makes him responsible. Aval meifa, when it comes to baking, kevin debayit sniuta, since she requires privacy, as Rashi notes over here, the meifa bayit sniuta shemegalez roateha, because she has to roll up her sleeves to knead the dough and to work the dough and then to put it into the oven, and that is something that she needs privacy for. So marvatu dechatzer misalke nafshayu. Therefore, the owner vacates the area. Therefore, the responsibility for guarding against damage falls upon her. And so what the Gemara's distinction in the end has to do with is that the party that is there is responsible. If the owner is present, then he will be responsible. He'll be responsible both for protecting against damage happening to this woman's property because he gave her permission to come in. And he also will then be responsible if his animal eats it and then falls ill from that. Then it's his problem because, again, he should have intervened or he should be the one taking care of the situation. In a circumstance where the Baalim can't be there because of the nature of the work that's being done, and therefore they have to leave, when they leave, they basically leave the woman in charge. Because they're giving her permission to be there, but since they can't be there, she becomes fully responsible for everything that's taking place there. That both is damage that happens to her items that are there, as well as the fact that if the Baal Bayit's animal comes and eats it and falls ill, that she's going to be responsible for that because she's the only one there. to stop the animal. She's the only one there that can intervene. And for that reason, she is more responsible. Now, given the answer of the Gemara, in a sense, what was the question, what was the havamina of the Gemara? Knowing what we know now, that the key element or the key difference here is whether the woman is there or is the sole person there, whether the balabait is the one that's there, then at that point, what is the havamina that the Gemara had? So the balabait is what, note over here, the salka datcho, the isha misalke mervata nafshayu tvei mishum yichud. That maybe in the case of tchina, in the case of the milling, that the woman herself would also require that the man leave then because of the problem of yichud. So you would thought maybe the case of tchina is the same or the case of lisha. The lisha requires tzniut because of the fact that she has to roll up her arms. And in the case of the tchina, she would want the guy to leave because of yichud. So we thought maybe the cases should be equated. The answer is they're not. That in the case of the tochein, she does not have him leave the area. Obviously, there are reasons why it wouldn't be yichud there. And that is different than the case by lisha, where she does insist that he leaves there because of the issues of tzniut. And that will explain the difference in the conclusions of the Braita as to who's responsible in those situations. Again, this somewhat accords with what we've seen until now, which is that once you are responsible, it's fully responsible for everything that takes place there. Whether here it's the woman because she's the only one there, whether it's the balabait when he's there, then you are responsible for whatever that takes place in that circumstance or in that situation. Right now, the next thing. He brought his shore into the chatzer balabait. So now, that's the case that the Mishnah discussed, is where he brings it in. That's the third of the three examples that the Mishnah uses. The first case was a case where he brought in kderot, it was the kadar. The next case is the case where he went in pirot. The third case is the case where he brings in his shore. So Amarava, hechnis shore lechatzer balabait. He brings his shore into the chatzer balabait shelo birshut, without permission. V'chafar ba barot shichim imearot. And the animal got busy and dug up the whole field, dug up all these obstacles in the field. Obviously, it doesn't have to be literally that it dug them out. Could be that it uncovered things that were there. Somehow it exposed or created these obstacles there that are like borot. Balashor chayav b'niskei chatzer. Number one is the balashor is responsible for all the damage that happened to the field itself, to the area itself, because his animal's there without permission, and his animal did damage to the field. Ubalachatzer chayav b'niskei abur. And the balachatzer is responsible for boar over here. Afagav damarmar, even though we have a principle that we've seen earlier, and we're going to see again later in the Masechta, ki ichre ish boar below shor boar, that it's only a responsibility of the individual where an man or a thinking individual is the one who dug the pit that's there, and not when an animal digs the pit that is there. Halcha kaven to eat le the hayich limluye, since the balachatzer should have filled in the borot after the animal dug them, below kamalio, and he didn't do that, kaman de kariyo dami. It's as if he dug them himself. It's as if he created those borot himself. So there are a lot of things that are going on over here. I have to understand them in the context of the case. The first of which is, we do have this principle that only if an Adam digs a boar is he responsible for it, but if an animal digs a boar, then you're not responsible for that. The main reason being that that's unusual behavior, uncharacteristic behavior of the animal, and therefore we don't expect them to dig borot and dig out pits, and therefore the owners are not going to be responsible for that, except in a case like this, where the owners now know about it, and they have a responsibility to fill it in. Now, normally, they wouldn't have such a responsibility to fill it in because the boar is found in the Rishut HaRabim. Since it's the public domain, he has no responsibility for the public domain. He's not even owning the public domain. The fact that the Torah obligates him in a case where he digs a pit in the Rishut HaRabim is already a chiddush. The Rabbi Yehuda told us that the Torah places it in your possession for responsibility, even though it's not yours, even though it's just the Rishut HaRabim. So over here, we would say the same thing, except for the fact that he owns the field. And since he owns the field, and he only later is mafkir the field, and when he's mafkir the field, he leaves the borot there, now he's putting obstacles or borot in the Rishut HaRabim, and we will deem it as if he was the one who dug the borot. So again, if the case or the animal dug it in the Rishut HaRabim, he would not be responsible to go back and fill it in, because it was an animal that dug it, not him. And it's not his property, his possession that he is responsible for. On the other hand here, where it's his property that he is having the borot dug out in, once the balachatzer is aware of the fact that they're there, and then he decides to mafkir that property and give it over to the rabim, then he is giving over to the rabim a property with obstacles in it, and he's responsible for the borot that are there. Now, it seems, according to Rashi, that as soon as he is aware of the fact that there are borot there, and he doesn't fill them in as mafkir's property, that he is responsible for that. Now, there is a sheet that the Ravid here who disagrees with Rashi, and the sheet that the Ravid is that you're only chayav, or the Bala Chatzer is only chayav, once the Bala Shor pays him for the damage that his Shor did to the property. So once the Bala Shor makes reparations and compensation for the damage that he did to the field, once that compensation is paid, then the burden shifts to the Bal HaChatzer, and then if the Bal HaChatzer is mafkir it with the barot in it, he will be responsible. So Rashi, who seems to say that as soon as the takala is there and you're aware of the takala, it's your responsibility, the Ravid says that transition only happens at the point at which the Bal HaShor pays for it. So that is obviously different between the Rashi and the Ravid. The Rashbo also is much more clear about this distinction about Rashi's pshat over here. But it could be to explain the difference between them, it might have to do with the fundamental reason that you have to make compensation, or what we want you to do when there's nezek that's done. And it might be that the Ravid believes that the proper way to give restitution or compensation to individual damaged is to restore the property to the way it was before. So that would be the primary way that we'd want you to do this. On the other hand, we give you a right to do it through monetary compensation. But that monetary compensation is a quote-unquote bidyavad way of dealing with it. We'd much prefer if you fix the field than simply just give them the money to pay for the damage that is there. On the other hand, Rashi believes that when it comes to Nezek, the primary way to solve the problem or make restitution is by paying cash. And that might lead to the difference in their opinions. Meaning that if Rashi believes that the primary way to make restitution is to pay money, then as soon as the Bala Shor is chayav for the nezek that he did, then it becomes the Bala Chatzer's problem at that point. On the other hand, for the Ravid, where the core or the main way or fundamental way that you need to fix the situation is to actually fix the field. And when you make compensation, that's only a bidyavad way out of it, then until you've made the actual compensation, you haven't taken care of your obligation. And therefore, the Ravid, that transition only happens once you've made compensation and paid for the field. So again, for the Ravid, the trigger or the trip wire is the fact that the Bala Shor has now made compensation to Bala Chatzer. That shifts the burden onto the Bala Chatzer. And then the Bala Chatzer will be responsible either if he gives someone permission to enter into there and they're borot there, or in the situation where he's mafkir the property, which is the case that we're speaking about here, then it's a bor b'shut rabim that he's going to be responsible for. But it's according to Rashi, as soon as he's aware of it, it becomes his problem, even if the Bala Shor has yet to pay him for the damage that was done. Next case, Amarova, Yichni Shor Lechatzer Balabayit. He brought his shore into the property of the Balabayit, Shelo Bershut, once again without permission, Vezikit Balabayit, and it damages the Balabayit himself. O Balabayit Huzakbo, or the Balabayit was injured by it, not by it actively, but he trips over it, or something happens that causes him damage, not from the animal attacking him. Chayav, then the Baal of the animal is responsible for that because he's there without permission. Ravatz, if it sits down, patur. It is patur. Gemara asked the obvious question, Mishum Darava, it's patur? Just because it sat down. Now, the assumption of Avatz is that either it sat down on Kelim and crushed them, or it sat down and the Balabai tripped on him. So how's that any different than the Resha where Rava says, you are Chayav? Why in the case of Ravatz are you patur? So I'm a Ravapa, my Ravatz. Ravatz doesn't mean he sat down, but rather she beats Galalim. That he defecated, he left dung all over the place, v'nitanfu kelav shel balabayit, and that caused damage or soiled the kelim of the balabayit. Davya glalim bor, because the dung itself or the feces that are coming out are bor, v'lo matzinu bor shchiyev bo et hakelim, and bor does not have a chiyuv when it comes to kelim, it's shor v'lo adam, chamor v'lo kelim. And since he doesn't have responsibility for kelim, that's why he's patur. He's not patur just because he's rovetz. The case is a case where whatever he created in there is a boar. And since what he created in there is a boar, then it takes on the dinim of boar. Boar is patur mikelim. When it says anicha l'shmol, that works well. According to Shmol damar kol takala boru. Anytime you have an obstacle that is dangerous or could cause damage, That's called bor. That's whether it's in your private domain or in the public domain. Until you relinquish control over it, it's not called a bor. How do you explain this case over here? Where was the hefker? So the word says, Amrei stam golim afkurei mafkir luhu, that the default status of dung, or when the animal is defecating, the assumption is that you are mafkir, that you relinquish control over that item. And therefore, even for Rav, it would be classified as a bor over here. So now, as Rashi explains over here, vidafka kelav, this is only true with regards to his utensils, who atzmo huzak, but if he himself was injured over here, chayav balashor, the balashor would be chayav, meaning that we have here a case of bor. By bor, we say shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim. Shor velo adam only plays to a case where the adam is killed in the bor. But if he's injured by the boar, then you are responsible. So the Adam, or if the individual himself was injured by the Glalim, then you will be responsible for that. The only Ptur is for Kelim that get, quote-unquote, killed by the dung. Kelim, as Rashi notes here, and we've seen it earlier in Masechta, that the breaking of Kelim, or the destruction of Kelim, is equivalent to their death, because they've lost their utility then. And just like Shor v'lo Adam is talking about the death of an Adam, so too, Chamor v'lo Kelim is talking about the death of the Kelim. But the death of Kelim is much easier to come by. And v'lo Patrin and Lay, and Rashi says, why would you think that he should be not responsible for damage done to the Balim? Because, Mishum ish bor v'lo shor bor. Wait a minute, you're only responsible for a bor that you dig. You're not responsible for a bor that your animal creates, if you're mafkirit. So why over here is he responsible for the Glalim when the individual falls over them in the Balabayit, slips on them and does damage to himself, or whatever reason that the damage came about, why are you responsible here if the animal created the problem? So as Rashi explains over here, Alpha Gav Dehu Lo Karya El Gamal Karo came into Bishat Nefila Didehu, since at the time that it was created it was his. Ba'alei Lisluke, and it was his responsibility to remove it, Kamo De Karya Ihu Dami. It's the equivalent of him digging it himself. And even though if he was mafkirit after a certain point of time, it's not like the case of a shor that digs a bor b'shut rabim. Because over there, nothing, or there was never a moment where it belonged to him. When the animal digs it in the b'shut rabim, it was never something that was his or his possession, and therefore he's not responsible for it. On the other hand, over here, it began as his responsibility when the animal created it, and then he relinquished control, or he's mafkirit. That case, he will be responsible for it, because it was his responsibility in a sense that it was his originally, and he can't be relinquishing control just to get out of the problem. Others term it or explain it that he should expect animals to defecate or to produce dung. That is what animals do, and that's their natural course. Since that's their natural behavior, that's expected. If it's expected, he's responsible to clean it up or get rid of it, and he can't just relinquish control and say it's a boar, the shore did it. On the other hand, when the shor digs in Rishut Rabim, over there you can say that's unanticipated behavior. That's something that I shouldn't have to have in mind. Therefore, when he does in Rishut Rabim, and it's not my responsibility in the Rishut Rabim, he does not have to go and dig, cover it over, and he's not held responsible for it. That's the way the Rashi deals with it. The Balei HaTosafot deal with Rashi's explanation and bring the explanation of the Ri. Even though in the end Tosafot favors Rashi's explanation, he brings the alternative explanation of the Ri, which is, how do you view the glalim over here? The glalim that the animal creates, are they something that is what we call bor achar nefilat onus? Or is that bor achar nefilat pshia? Or is that a bor that's created after you did something that was incorrect? So the way Rashi's terming it, and that's the way the Balei HaTosafot suggests over here, that what Rashi considers it over here is a case that if it was glalim or bor that was created after a nefilat pshia, it was after it happened with something that you were a posheya, because you brought your shor into this property without permission, shudar kolar beats galalim. And that's what it does. When animals are in someone else's property, they leave a big mess behind them. And so therefore you are a posheya, and you are responsible to clean it up. The Ri speculates and suggests that maybe even in the case of Adam, you'd be patur. Not only would you be patur for the case of kelim, but also for Adam, because maybe we classify it as a case of bor that was after nefilat onus, and bor after nefilat onus, you're not responsible to clean up or remove. So that's what the Ri's suggestion is. Maybe this is classified as nefilat onus. The Tosafot very heavily favors Rashi's interpretation, and he says that the Gemara seems to sound like that, and it feels much more like what Rashi's saying, is that there's a Pshia here, and you do have a responsibility to clean it up, and the only exemption is for Kelim, which is a unique exemption of Bor, and not for Adam or any other damage that happens from the Glalim. Vamarova, remember, has another case. Nichnas lechatzer balabayit shelo birshut, veziket the balabayit. He goes into the house, the property of the balabayit without permission, and hurts the balabayit. Oh, the balabayit was zakbo, or the balabayit was injured by him, meaning that he tripped over him or something happened in that vein. Chayav, the person or the intruder who came in without permission is responsible. Heziko balabayit patur. The balabayit hurts the intruder, then he is patur. Now we have a big qualification over here, which is Amar Papa lo amran el dolo habayodobe. That's only if the balabayit was not aware of the presence of the intruder. Aval habayodobe, if he knows about the presence of the intruder, Heziko balabayit chayav. If the balabayit damages him, he's chayav. My taima, mishum da'amrlei, because he considered him. This is a term that we saw earlier again in the Gemara. He did the charushut lafuke. Maybe you have permission to remove me when I trespass into your property. Lazuke let the charushuta. What you don't have permission is to use force or to injure me in order to remove me from the property. So that the removal from the property you have permission to do. Ask him to leave, tell him to leave, get the Beit Din involved to get him to leave. But to physically injure him in order to have him leave, that you do not have permission to do, unless it's habam machteret, where you feel your life is at risk or there's danger involved, where then you might have permission to use force, not necessarily deadly force. You have to use the least deadly force to remove him from the situation. But the basic idea here is the awareness of the balabayit determines whether he's going to be held culpable for the damage that he does. Rashi seems to explain that yada or lo yada here means literally, does he know that he's there, or does he not know that he's there? Is he aware of his presence, or is he not aware of his presence? But that's the way that Rashi explains it. On the other hand, the Rambam explains the case here, or the situation of yada bay, is not about whether he knows about it or not, it's whether he intends to do damage or not. So, even if he knows about the presence of the intruder, he's only responsible if he does damage to the intruder intentionally. If he is kavanah to injure him. Then if he's still working or doing whatever he's doing, and unintentionally he hurts the intruder, even though he's aware of it, he will not be chayab. So the Rambam says it revolves around kavanah and lo kavanah, whereas Rashi says it revolves around yada velo yadale. This will have importance in a second when we discuss this versus the Mishnah that we saw earlier. The Gemara says, v'aznu tumayu, and Rava and Rav Papa here are the shita tam. If both of them have permission to be there, or neither of them have permission to be there, if they damage each other, if they happen passively that they are damaged, then they are p'turim. The whole reason here that you're p'tur is because either both have permission or both do not have permission. Aval echad b'rshut v'echad shelo b'rshut. One of them has permission to be there, one does not have permission to be there. The Rishut Patur, the one that has permission to be there is Patur. Shelo Rishut, the one who does not have permission to be there is Chayav. And so you see over here that you are Patur. When you have permission to be there, then you are Patur from the damages that you do or the damage that is inflicted on you, or in essence, the Balabayit is responsible in that case. The way Rashi explains the case of Shneim Rishut or Shneim Shelo Rishut is, Gom Rishut Rabim, meaning that Rashi says it covers a range of possibilities of when both of you have Rishut to be in there. Rashi gives the example where they're both running in Rishut Rabim. And we saw in the Mishnah earlier that you're not allowed to run in the Rishut Rabim with the exception of Erev Shabbat. Therefore, if both of you are running the Rishut Rabim, you're both acting without permission. So Rashi sees this running a wide gamut of cases, where it could be both of them Rishut, both of them without Rishut, and that's Rishut Rabim, Chatzer and Nizak, all of those different areas. The Balei HaTosafot, in order to avoid the problem that Rashi is going to run into, which he himself discusses, says that he doesn't think that it has such a wide berth, but rather, he says that the case here, near Lefereish, Kagon Shenichnas, the Chatzer Balabayit, Shelo Bishut or Bishut. He says simply, he thinks the case here of Rishut or Shelo Bishut is whether you have permission to be in the property of the Balabayit or not. If you have permission to be there, that means both have permission. you don't have permission to be there, that means both of you are not with permission. So what is that? Come on. If they gave him permission to enter there, come on. The person who's given permission to enter the Baal HaBayit's property should have in mind that maybe he's not the only person the Baal HaBayit gave such permission to do. Maybe there are other people also that were granted that permission. And therefore, they're shnehem birshut. It's a case where they're both their reshut because both of them should have thought or considered that there might be another party there. Similarly, shnehem shalo birshut is when the guy trespasses and goes into the property. He should think about the fact that if he just trespassed into the property, maybe there's another trespasser on the property. And so if they're both there without permission, they are, both should be aware of each other, or at least consider the other person because of the fact that they both entered without reshut, and you should think that there are other people like that. The only case where that isn't true is a case where one entered with reshut and the other one entered without reshut. The guy who entered with reshut does not have to consider that there are people that are coming in or trespassing over there. So in that instance, if the individual who came in shalom reshut is injured, then he's not chayav, or if he causes injury to the person who's there with permission, he will be responsible for the damage that is done. That's the way that the Baalei HaTosafot explained the case over here, where again, as Rashi explains it to have a much wider consequences, both for reshut rabim and other places. The problem that Tosafot is trying to avoid, and what he asks about Rashi, and Rashi himself acknowledges, is the problem that we saw. There's a Mishnah back on Lamed Bet in Perek HaManiach, which says there that if shnehem birshut, if they both have permission to be in the reshut rabim, shnehem shayu malchim reshut rabim, both of them are there, chad ratz v'chad malich, one of them is running, one of them is walking, or shnehem ratzim, or they're both running, v'ziku zedzeh, and they damage each other, shnehem p'turim. They are both p'turim over there, and the Gemara went on to explain that because they both are acting inappropriately, then they are p'tur. Over there, the Gemara doesn't seem to make any distinction between whether it was damage done, Heziku, or Huzak, or it was a case where they were damaged in a passive form. Whereas over here, we see a distinction between Heziku versus Huzku. So now, Rashi has to then explain, if he thinks our case over here is similar to the Mishnah in HaMiniach, what is the difference between the case over here and the case in Perek HaMiniach? And so Rashi explains, and he says, "B'chayavin, why are you chay over here? D'minizakim lo shani la ben mitkavein leshein mitkavein." When it comes to nezek, Adam is muad olam. We don't distinguish between intent and lack of intent. V'hadent zman be'miniach. What about the Mishnah miniach? Shnayim sheyum alchim b'rshut rabim v'ziku zed zep turim. If they're both walking, you are patur because they're both acting with the shut. How is ziku? Who's kuhu? Even though the Mishnah says, hey, Ziku, that they were damaged, like it says over here, where it would seem to indicate they should be chayav, the word meaning of the word, hey, Ziku, over there is husku. Zedzeh. That is what it means. Velo dakbali shnei. The Mishnah wasn't so careful about what the word is that it used. When even though it used the word, hey, Ziku, then that is not the real word that it meant to use. It really meant to use husku, that they were damaged. And this is key to Rashi's distinction over here. Rashi's distinction is between whether you did it actively, you actively caused damage, or whether you caused damage through a passive form or passive manner. If you're doing it actively, when you both have permission, then you're going to be responsible for the damage that you did. On the other hand, if the damage comes about because of your passive activity, you're lying on the ground and the other guy tripped over you, there you will not be responsible for the damage because you had permission to be there. And if it happened unintentionally, you're not going to make you chayav. Now with Rashi, again, unintentional, intentional doesn't matter. The difference between there is whether you did a maisa biyadayim, you did hezek biyadayim. It wasn't biyadayim. It wasn't something that you did actively. That's how Rashi explains the difference between the Mishnah back on Lamed Bet and our Gemara over here, as well as explaining the Gemara itself over here, as to what's the difference between Ezekiel and Uzku. The Rambam, on the other hand, l'shita to that we saw before, that the Rambam thinks that the pivotal issue over here is not knowledge, but rather kavanah. He says that the difference between the Mishnah before in Bayek Lamed Bet is pshuto because there was no kavanah. There was a lack of intent to damage on the Mishnah Lamed Bet, and that's why everybody is patur. The lack of kavanah is what grants you the exemption. Whereas over here, when you did Heziku, when you damaged the other party actively, you had kavanah. You did it intentionally. Since you did it intentionally, you're going to be responsible for it. Who's cool? In that case, where he didn't know about it or was done unintentionally, then you're going to be patur. So that'll be the distinction that Rambam makes between our case over here versus the case in HaMiniach, is whether it has kavanah or intent to damage, and doesn't have intent to damage, whereas Rashi sees the difference between an active maaseh b'yadayim versus a passive damage that happens. And Rashi says that the Mishnah in Lamed Bet uses the wrong word. It shouldn't have used heziku, should have used the word husku, which implies passive damage versus active damage. And the Balei Tosafot deal with the issue by saying that the case over here does not overlap with the case, the Mishnah on Lamed Bet. The cases here are all cases where it's in the reshut of the individual who's giving permission, whether you're trespassing, two parties are trespassing, they both have permission to be there, but it has nothing to do with the reshut Rabim, which is the discussion of the case in the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Bet. So Tosafot, by narrowing the cases, avoids the overlap between here and the Mishnah there, and avoids the problem that Rashi has to deal with. The Gemara now continues and says, Nafala bor, bevish me'amav chayav. If the animal falls into the pit and then causes the water to go putrid, then he is chayav if the animal entered the area without permission. Naval, so now Gemara says, Amarava, lo shana lo shevish b'shat nefila. It's only true if the water went putrid when the animal fell in. Avala achar nefila, after it's already fallen in there, and that's when it goes putrid, patur. My daima, have you shore bor? The shore is the equivalent of a bor. Umayim kelim, and the waters in the cistern there are the equivalent of kelim. Below matzinu bor shechiyei boat kelim. We don't find a bor that is chayav in kelim. Again, shore velo adam, chamor velo kelim. So for that reason, the shore that falls in there, once he's in there and laying in the water, he becomes the equivalent of a bor at that time. Margen says, Anicha l'shmo damar kol takala bor, who anytime you have an obstacle or a problem that's out there, it's called bor. Rav damar ha-demafkirle, it's not called a bor until you relinquish control over it. Michael Meymar, hello itmar hachitmar. The Rav says that can't be the explanation over here, but rather you have to explain the machlokin in the following manner. Amar Rav lo shanu elo shivish mi gufo, that the waters went putrid because of the goof of the animal itself. Aval hivish mi recho, if the waters went putrid because of the smell of the animal, patur. My daima, what's the reason? Groma ba'almahu. It's simply causation. The groma ba'alma lo mechayiv. And when it comes to groma v'nizokin, you are not chayav. So over here, the difference or the way that it happens is that when the animal falls into the bor, he has dirt on him. He has teeth on him. He has all sorts of things that can cause problems to the bor. And therefore, when he falls into the bor and does the damage in that manner, he is chayav because he damaged it directly. On the other hand, if the damage comes about because the animal died there and now is rotting in the water, over there that's all groma, even though it is a outcome or a direct result of his dying in the bor, nevertheless it's not direct damage caused by the shore itself, but rather by the carcass of the nevela that's sitting there, and that is not responsible for, because that's groma shibin izikin. And now the Gemara continues and says, based on the Mishnah, Ayu aviv o beno l'tocho mishalim et hakofer. If his father or his son were in there, then if the animal falls on them and kills them, he is responsible and has to pay kofer, the bala shor. Vamai, what's the problem here? Hatamu, this animal is a tam. And a tam, even though he might be subject to a death penalty when he kills people, he certainly does not pay kofer until he is a mu'ad. So what we don't understand here is, why is the bala shor paying kofer if this is the first time the animal fell into a pit and landed on people and killed them? Samrav b'muadli pola p'nei adam b'borot askinan. We already saw this back on Daf Mem Dalet, and the Gemara Mem Dalet created problems because we have to reconcile with the Gemara over here, which is Rav says this is a case where the animal already established a consistency of falling on top of people inside of a boar. Where it says, Yochi Barktalo. That's the case that he has a good track record of killing people in a boar. Every time he landed on people and killed them inside the boar, he's chayav mita. So what's this shore doing around at this point that he's going to become a mu'ad? Some of Yosef, chaza yiruka, he saw vegetables or vegetation, v'nafal, and then he fell in. All right, so now this explanation of Rav is problematic because Rav over here seems to indicate that the animal, or you are responsible for kofar, even though Rav back on Mem Dalet seemed to indicate that when it says patur, you're even patur from the kofar over there. Not only patur from mita, the death penalty for the animal because it was unintentional, the killing that the animal did, you're also patur from the kofar because there's only kofar when there's a chiyuv mita associated with the animal. So how come back on Mem Dalet Rav says no mita, no kofar? And over here, Rav is willing to say that even if there is no mita, even though there's no death penalty, over here you still pay kofar. How do we reconcile between these two? So Rashi explains the difference, and we mentioned this back on Daf Mem Dalet. It's mentioned machloket here between Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot is how to explain this Gemara. Rashi thinks that you have to establish the fact that you are a muad, or consistently fall into the boar, by doing the same activity over and over again, which is here, this animal keeps falling into the boar, and then landing on people and killing the people. And it's not brought to trial for that. Therefore, in the final case, when it falls into the boar, even though when it falls into the boar, it was done in such a manner that it was unintentional, here you're going to be chayav for kofar. But the reason being is because in the first three instances where he fell into the boar and landed on people, the Balei HaTosafot suggests, according to Rashi, you wouldn't have to even land on people. What the shor is mu'at for here is falling into borot when it sees something to eat on the side, on the top, or on the other side, at the bottom, whatever it is that tempts the animal, every time he sees that, he's a mu'at to fall into borot. So three times he already established that principle because he's fallen to a boar three times when he saw vegetation. Then on the fourth time, he goes and sees vegetation and falls in and he lands on someone and kills them. What Rashi says is, even though he's not subject to a death penalty there because it was b'li kavanah, it was unintentional that he fell on those people, nevertheless, he is a mu'ad for falling into borot. And the fact that he's a mu'ad will obligate the parties here to pay kofar. The Rashi comes up with this chiddush, which is what bothers Tosafot, is that you can establish mu'adut for something that does not, in the end, the item that you're making responsible for. Here you establish a pattern of behavior that an animal falls into borot when it sees yerek. What you don't have is a pattern of behavior by which, once you've done that and you land on someone, then there's still a tamas. The first time he went into a boar and landed on people. Nevertheless, Rashi says the fact that he three times fell into a boar, that's enough to establish that you're a mu'ad, even though the people weren't there all along. The last time when you fall on the people, now you're a mu'ad for kofar, even though you're not a mu'ad for mita. And that's how Rashi explains the Gemara over here. And similarly, back in the Gemara, on Daf Mem Dalet, he suggested the same thing, which is that the animal, on the first three times, knocked over walls to kill people on the other side. He intentionally bumped the wall to kill the person on the other side three times. On the fourth time, he goes to rub his back on the wall, and the wall happens to fall on the person on the other side. Again, Rashi says that's enough to establish the fact that he is a mu'ad, because he did the same behavior. Even though in the first three cases he did it intentionally, and in the fourth case he did it unintentionally, Rashi says that doesn't matter, you can still establish a pattern of behavior, consistency of behavior. The obvious problem, is what the Balei HaTosafot note about Rashi's pshat is, you're extrapolating from one case where you're a mu'ad to other cases where they're not identical and still make it into a mu'ad. So the Balei HaTosafot suggests, back on Daf Mem Dalet, and also over here, make a similar suggestion. Number one is, mu'ad over here does not have to mean mu'ad in the sense of doing it three times. Mu'ad can sometimes mean shein and regel. And when someone acts out of shein and regel are considered to be in mu'adin mitzchilatan. And they're called mu'ad for that reason. You should just know that the ra'ah, the ra'ivid, have a sheet over here that even by shein and regel you'll have to do it three times in order to become a mu'ad. That's a gzeret ha-katuv that they say in order to be mu'ad, you need three times. Balei HaTosafot here suggests that you're mu'ad day one for shein and day one for regel. The difference between in the case over here and the case over there is exactly that. The case over there is shein, and shein, which is something that is, by definition, unintentional, is why he's patur from the kofar over there. Regel is something that, by definition, is intentional, because regel, or the nature of nezek of regel, is that he walks the normal way that he walks. And he does it. And the Gemara says in other places, if he tramples a young child underfoot, that he's chayav kofar because the animal clearly intentionally did it. Because walking and walking on things that are in front of him is intent for the animal, and that is considered to be kavanah. That's how the Balei HaTosafot explained the two different cases here, by which Rav says you are chayav kofar because it's regel. Whereas over there, on Daf Mem Dalet, it's a case of shein, and that's why you are patur. It has nothing to do with three times or tam, because over here you are a mu'ad mitzchilatan, because we're dealing with shein and regel and not keren. That's Rav's position. On the other hand, Shmuel Amar, Hamani, he answers that it is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Damar tam mishalem chatzi kofar. That goes back to the sugyot about Balashor Naki, that Rabbi Eliezer darshan from that it gives a tour for chatzi kofar. Rabbi Yosef Glili, who says it's a ptur for Demei Vladot, we noted over there, that's why Chazal believed that Rabbi Yosef Glili thinks that you are Chayav and Chatzi Kofer, because he doesn't have the meal to Balash Arnaki that Rabbi Eliezer has. So what Shmuel suggests over here is that the author of this situation or circumstances, Rabbi Yosef, who says that a Tam pays Chatzi Kofer. So then it's fine that it's a Tam. When he fell into the boar, then that's why he's Chayav Kofer day one. Not full Kofer, but at least Chatzi Kofer. Ulama, Rabbi Yosef Glili. It is Rabbi Yosef Glili. The Amar Kerabi Tarfon, that holds like Rabbi Tarfon. The Amar Keren B'chatzer Nizak, Nezek Shalem Mishalem. Achanami Kofer Shalem Mishalem. So not only does he hold like Rabbi Yosef Glili, that Tom pays Chatzi Kofer, he also holds like Rabbi Tarfon, that when it's Chatzer Nizak, you pay full Nezek, because there's no exemption for Tom in Chatzer Nizak, according to Rabbi Tarfon. Based on that, if you combine those two Shitot, it'll turn out that Bechatzer Nizak, you'll pay full kofar even when you are a Tam. So we overcome the problem by saying that even the Tam here could be Chayav Kofar according to these Tanaim. Where it says, Bishlam ala'ula hainu diktani haya avivu b'no l'tocho. Now, according to Ula's explanation, I understand why we're talking about his father and his son being in there is because it's in the property of the Nizak. And we need to know that it's in the property of Nizak because that would create the whole scenario. It's the property of the Nizak. It's Rabbi Yosef Glili says Chatzi Kofer, and it's Rabbi Tarfon says Nezek Shalem, which makes it into Chol Kofer. On the other hand, Elishmuel, Myria, Avivu Beno. Why does it matter that it was his father or his son in the boar? If anybody's in the boar and you kill them, you're going to be Chayav. Because it's not unique to the Chatzer and Nizak. It would be true in Rishut Arbim as well. So Filo Acher Nami, even if it was someone else. Marzenez, Ruchay Demil Toktani. Just giving you a case. That's a normal situation that people, when you're around people, around the property of this individual, the most likely people to be in the boor are his father and his son. Nothing of significance, just simply a case that is plausible. All right. So Rabbi Yehuda at the end of the Mishnah says that if you brought it in with permission, you are responsible if you accepted responsibility. Itmar. Rav Amar Hilchotok Tanakama. Rav says Alocha is like the Tanakama, that when you give permission to be there, you by default accept responsibility to be shomer the item. Shmuel Amar Hilchotok Rabbi. Shmuel says Alocha is like Rabbi, that it's not that way. Only if you explicitly accept responsibility are you being shomer. Without that explicit acceptance, then you are not responsible when you give permission for them to enter. So Tan Rabbanan, Knosh Shorcha Ushmaro Hezik Chayav Uzak Patur. The case where he says, bring your shor in and take care of it and guard it. If it does damage, then the Bala Shor is Chayav. Huzak, if it was damaged, patur. Knosh shorcha v'niyeshmerenu, if he says, bring in your shor, and I'll watch it, the Bala Bayit says, I'll take care of it. Huzak chayav, if it was damaged, then the Bala Chatzer is responsible for the damage done to it. Hezik, but if it does damage, patur. It says, ha'gufa kasho. There's an internal steer right here. Amar, knosh shorcha v'shmaro, say, bring in your shor and guard it. Hezik chayav, huzak patur. If it does damage, you are chayav. If it gets damaged, you are patur. Time Adam Alei Shmaro. That's only because he told them to guard it. The Chayav Balashor. That's why the Balashor is Chayav. Upatur Balachatzer and the exemption of the Balachatzer. Hastama. Had there been no statement that you watch it, saying to the Balashor, you watch it, Chayav Balachatzer, the default would have been that the Balachatzer is Chayav, Upatur Balashor, and the Balashor would be exempt in that case. The Vistama, Mikabalei Nitiruta. From there it sounds like the default state is that you do accept responsibility for watching it when you give permission to be there. And that's like the Chachamim. Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of that Braita? Kno Shorcha, Vani Yeshmerenu. Bring in the shore and I'll watch it. Chuzak Chayav, if the shore is damaged, then the Bala Chatzir is responsible for that. Hezik, Patur. If it does damage, then he is Patur. Assumption here is that he's doing damage to the property of the Bala Chatzir itself. Taima Damarle Vani Yeshmerenu. That's only because the Bala Bait explicitly accepted responsibility. Who the Mechayev Bala Chatzer? That's when the Bala Chatzer is responsible, Patur Bala Shor. Hastama, the default situation would be Chayav Bala Shor, Patur Bala Chatzer. That the Bala Shor would be Chayav, and the Bala Chatzer would be exempt. The Mistama, in that case, the default would be Lo Mikabalei Neitiruta, that he doesn't accept responsibility when he gives him permission. Atan the Rabbi. The second half, it seems to follow the position of Rabbi. Tamar Chikabalei Neitiruta, Patur Bala Bait Lishmor. It sounds like Rabbi in the second half. Reisha Rabbonon v'seifa Rabbi. The first statement in the Braita is according to Rabbonon. The second statement is like Rabbi. Marlaza Tavra Mishishanazo, Lo Shanazo. Gemara gives this numerous times in Baba Kama. The answer to that, there is dual authorship or attribution in this Braita. And Enochanami, there are two authors here. even though the Gemara could have answered in other ways, the other ways that could have answered over here are seemingly dochak. That's what Balei Tosfot suggests. Therefore, Davra is a better answer to say that there's dual authorship is a better situation over here. Rav Amar Kula Rabbanani. Rav says, no, the whole break is according to Rabbanan. I did not see Reisha Shmaro, because in the Reisha where he met Dafka, watch it, Tana Seifa Ani Eshmarenu. He wrote in the Seifa Ani Eshmarenu as being the parallel structure, but not to be Medayek out of it. And therefore, Rav believes that the whole thing is authored by the Rabbanan. Rav Papa Amar Kula Rabbi, the whole thing is Rabbi. The Sover like your Rabbi Tarfon. And he holds like Rabbi Tarfon, the Amar, Karen Bechazer Anizak, Nezek Shalem, Shalem. That when it's Karen, Beshut and Izak, their Tom still pays Nezek Shalem, there's no Chatzi Nezek. Hilkach, Amarlei Shmaro, if he tells him, watch it, Lo Maknilei Makom B'Chatzer. That means that he didn't grant him a right in the Chatzer. V'Avilei Karen B'Chatzer and Izak. Then it becomes Karen B'Chatzer and Izak, V'Karen B'Chatzer and Izak, M'Shalem Nezek Shalem. Lo Amarlei Shmaro, if he didn't explicitly tell him to watch it, Aknui Aknilei Makom. Then he granted him rights in the property when he says you can bring your animal into here. Then they become joint owners in a sense of the property. In that case, you only pay chatzi nezek. So the chayav and patur have nothing to do with the diuk out of the ratio or the diuk out of the seifa, but rather the understanding over here of chayav and patur. It revolves around whether it's classified as the Chatzar and Izak, or whether it's classified as Chatzar Shutafim. And therefore, in the first scenario, when he says Ushmaro, that you have to watch it, then when it says that he's Chayav, it means that he's Chayav Nezek Shalem. And then, Umizak Shor Shobala Chatzar HaStama Chatzi Nezek. But in the other situation, the reason that you are Patur, or say the deal that you can make out of that in the other scenario, you would be Patur doesn't mean Patur the Gamrei, it just means patur from nezek shalem, but rather you're chayav for chatzi nezek. So in both instances, the bala shor is responsible, whether you explicitly tell him to do it or whether you don't explicitly tell him. The difference being whether when you explicitly tell him to watch it, it becomes a chiyuv of nezek shalem because then it's chatzar nizak. Whereas if you don't explicitly tell him to watch it, then it becomes chatzar shutafin. And if that's the case, then you would only pay chatzi nezek, meaning that the Baal Ashur is still responsible. He's only responsible for chatzi nezek, and that's all like Rabbi, which is that the stam, or the default situation, is that you do not accept responsibility. Now, as far as the psak is concerned, it's interesting here, that Machlok and Rav and Shmuel is how to paskin. Generally, when it comes to Dinei Mamononot, we would paskin like Shmuel, which would indicate that Shmuel would paskin like Rabbi, and that would be the halacha. What's difficult about that, and the Baal Tosfot pointed out, is that first of all, Rav over here set up the case in the Braita as being totally according to the sheet of the Rabbanan, as well as Rav in a number of the situations before, as well as how much responsibility you have when you give permission for someone to enter, seemingly Rav is explaining the sheet of the Rabbanan, and Rav says you have extensive responsibilities in all of those cases. So Rav seems to paskin like the Rabbanan, whereas Shmuel is paskin like Rabbi. The rules of Piskei Halacha between Rav and Shmuel, in Dinei, the Halacha should be like Shmuel. Now then, we have the other principle, which is Rava, who's a Batra, generally Halacha is like Rava. And in that case, Rava over here seems to pass like the Chachamim, which leads to a problem with regards to the Psak. All right, now we'll just read the Mishnah, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. The Mishnah says, Shor Shayamit Kaveh Lechaveiro, the Shor that intended to injure its fellow Shor, Vikata Isha, and instead it got the woman, Vyatsu Yelada, and caused her miscarry. Patur mit mei vladot. You are patur from the mei vladot. That could be for one of two reasons. That either could be like Rabbi Yosef Glili, who says that Bala Shor Naki tells you that you are patur mit mei vladot. Or it could come out of the pasuk itself, which is ki enatsu anashim, anashim velo shvarim. Vadam shayim mitkaven l'chaviro. On the other hand, if a person intended to hit his friend, because the isha instead he hit the woman, v'yatsu yiladeh, and caused her miscarry, shalem to mei vladot. He is responsible for the mei vladot. That's explicit in psukim. Which is v'natan that is chayav to the bala isha v'natan biflilim. He has to pay for the miscarriage over here. Now that will depend on who you think like. If you think like Rabbi Shimon, who says that when you intend to kill one person, you kill the other person, you are not chayav mita. Then this will be the scenario here: is where he intended to kill his friend, instead of killing his friend, killed the woman or caused her to miscarry. Despite the fact that there might be kamla diravamine in the killing of the woman, according to Rabbi Shimon, even though he's not subject to the death penalty, because of Tana de Beit Chizkiah that says anytime you're involved with something that could end up a death penalty, it's poter you because of Kamli de Rabbeinu. This might be different because the psukim specifically say that the Bali Shah gets the Dmei Vladot, and that payment might be independent of anything that happens to the woman. The other hand, for the Chachamim who think that if you intend to kill one person, kill another person, you're Chayav Mita, obviously the scenario here is not where he intended to kill the friend and kill the woman, but simply that he injured the woman. Whether he intended to injure or kill his friend, in the end he only injured the woman, and that's why he's Chayav the Dmei Vladot over here. Kezad Mishmalim Dmei Vladot, how do we assess the value of Dmei Vladot? Shemini Teisha, Kama Hi Yafa Ashlo Yalda. We say how much she was worth before she gave birth. And then we look at it, how much she is worth after she gives birth. This is similar to what we saw in yesterday's daf, that you don't look at each item independently because that overassigns value to it. We simply look at a woman who's pregnant, a woman who's not pregnant. What's the differential in value? So in the context of the whole, that is the value that we're looking for. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Shimon Gamliel says, Im kei misha isha, you'll let it. Mishabcho? You're telling me that mishabachat? You're telling me that once the woman gives birth, she goes up in value? Ela shaminet avladot kamahen yafin v'notein nabal. Shimon Gamliel says, no, you look at an independent valuation over here, because he doesn't think that the change in the value of the woman from the time that when she's pregnant to the time of post-pregnancy and her ability to work or her utility in that case are a proper assessment of the value of the Dmei Vladot, and therefore you have to assess them independently, and the Gemara will discuss the reasoning behind these. And he gives them to the Baal, like we saw before, that it belongs to the Baal HaIsha. That the payment here, I know she aneshka, she has shita la Baal HaIsha, and at that briefly lean, we learned that Baal HaIsha means it goes to the husband, even though the husband's no longer married to her, even if it's a out-of-wedlock pregnancy. Bimein la Baal, if she has no husband, no tain liyorshav, it goes to his inheritors, not to the wife. Haita shivcha v'nishtacharau gyoret patur. If she was a shivcha who was just freed, and she's married to an Eved Kanani who's freed, or if she was a gyoret who's married to a ger, in all those cases, you are patur. Now, as Rashi notes over here, it's not because she is married to a Eved Kanani that was nishtacharer, or that a gyoret only marries a ger, because even if they married an Israelite over here in Israel over here, the same would be true. The main issue over here is that we assume that there are no inheritors in this case. And that's what Rashi notes over here. Tosafot already noted this back in the Gemara when we learned it earlier. The reason it says over here, instead of shivcha mishuchreret, a freed slave, is because she was recently freed. Since she was recently freed, she has no children. She has no children, she has no inheritors. And ger, or a Eved Kanani, Shifcha Kanani, that are freed, or Ger Giorot that convert, they have no inheritors, because they are Ketinok Shinola Dami, unless they have children after they have converted. Therefore, if they're recently converted or recently freed, it's unlikely that they have any children. If they don't have any children, they have no inheritors. That means if they pass away, all their property is Hefker, and the first person to take possession of it gets it. In this case, the closest person to take possession of it is the one who did the Nezek, or is Mazik, the woman. And since he's the closest one to that possession, now he no longer owes her the money, or money to the Yoshim. There are no Shim, and he takes possession of it, and he no longer has to make that payment. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Memtet Amud Aleph.